Flooding danger lessens, but it's far from over. Good evening, I'm Connor Valentine.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We start our flood coverage with the improving situation in the Bitterroot, then Capitol reporter Dan Boyce takes us to some of the flooded areas in the Helena Valley. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mogg talks with the head of the Salish and Kootenai Tribal Corporation preparing to take over ownership and operation of Kerr Dam. Some flooding continued throughout much of Montana today, but in most areas, including in the hard-hit Bitterroot Valley, the situation is a little bit better than yesterday. Ron Nicholas is director of emergency management for Ravalli County, and he gave news director Sally Mock this update.
Some of the ditches have been cleaned out and debris removed from culverts. That kind of stuff was happening yesterday during the emergent part of the event, but it is a whole lot better than yesterday for that reason. Now, saying that, especially the further north you go in our county, there's still a lot of snow on the ground. And so if we have another rain event or the temperatures raise too high, too fast, it's going to be there again.
And that's exactly what is forecast.
I think until next week sometime it starts to cool down and maybe not so much precipitation. I'm not sure. That changes from time to time. But, yeah, we've got to slow it down here for a little bit and let people take a breath.
What kind of damage has the flooding that's happened so far caused?
Most of the damage that I have seen are roads, the side roads, driveways. There has been water in crawl spaces of homes, and there's been water in some basements of homes. It's extensive damage to the roads and driveways. I mean, in some places, it's pretty bad.
This is throughout the valley, but is Florence the most hard hit at this point?
Yes, Florence and the northern part of the valley is probably the most affected by this because they have more snow, for one. And also, that area seems to flood a little bit sooner than the rest of the valley for some reason. And most of the flooding that we experienced yesterday was on the east side of the Bitterroot. It has that exposure, and that's pretty typical.
And I know the county has made sandbags available. People can pick them up at various fire districts and so on, and I assume they are going through those pretty quickly.
I stopped at the Florence Fire Hall this morning, and they have gone through so many sandbags. I don't remember the number, but so much sand. There were people there at 4:30 this morning. There were people there when I showed up. They have filled a lot of sandbags, and some of it is preemptive measures taken by people, but there's been a lot of it, yes.
A lot of neighbors helping neighbors.
Neighbors helping neighbors, and the fire department's been great up there, too. They've been helping the folks.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed on the forecast, and I have been speaking with Ron Nicholas, who's head of emergency management for Ravalli County. Ron, thanks for the update.
You're welcome.
Only minor street flooding was reported in Missoula today. The city will continue to provide free sandbags throughout the weekend at their facility west of the airport. Also, Home Depot of Missoula is providing free sand and sandbags.
The worst is yet to come for flooding in some areas of central and southwest Montana as warm temperatures through the weekend are expected to continue. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce visits efforts to keep the waters at bay in the Helena Valley.
Kids at Helena's Rossiter Elementary School are playing out at recess, right next to a brand new lake that seemingly rose up out of the ground overnight. A sump pump is sucking runoff from the road, entering the school's parking lot, and 6-year-old Cadence watches a half dozen men climbing in and out of the bed of a pickup at the edge of the flood.
I think they're trying to put sandbags down so it stops the water.
No, all the way down.
Sandbag season is coming a little early this year. The men have built a sandbag wall 2 or 3 bags high around a good portion of the school's front side. They got to it pretty early in the morning and appear to have stopped the water from reaching the school like it has in past years for now.
You need sandbags, sir? Do you need sandbags?
Please.
Okay. What I'm going to do...
On the south side of Rossiter Elementary, West Valley Fire Chief Jerry Shepard is waving people into the parking lot of the Helena Trap Shooting Club. Workers have just dug a ditch to divert waters away from Rossiter. And volunteers stand upon an enormous pile of sand, shoveling more sand into more bags as quickly as they can. An emergency declaration from county commissioners has allowed the county to offer the bags for free. Jason McGarrah lives here in the valley. He's taking a couple truckloads back to his house, trying to prevent the damage his home saw during massive spring flooding in 2011.
Yeah, indoor swimming pools aren't all that much fun.
Chief Shepard says the parking lot has been a busy place.
We started yesterday about 4 o'clock, and we're right at about 24,000 sandbags. Gone. Filled.
Law enforcement, fire, and other public safety officials meet in East Helena for a briefing on conditions from Lewis and Clark County Sheriff Leo Dutton. He says the Augusta area is faring the worst.
14 or 15 houses that are actually underwater.
One death has been attributed to the flooding. A man helping free up an ice jam in East Helena suffered a heart attack Thursday. Water pours across the valley's Mill Road. Resident Amanda Plona surveys her neighbor's sunken yard, where it's flowing a few feet deep. She walks around to her backyard, where neighbors behind her house are surrounded by water on all sides.
He's got a challenge over there. They have worked and worked to build that moat. They just moved in this summer. Big surprise.
Lewis and Clark County officials expect flooding in the area to get worse through Sunday. I'm Dan Boyce reporting in Helena.
Yellowstone County officials say 5 residents near Laurel have been evacuated from their homes because of flooding. Dwayne Winslow is the county's disaster and emergency services coordinator. He says Byam Road was closed today due to flooding from the Yellowstone River. Resident Travis Berman tells the Billings Gazette there is 4 feet of water in his basement. The flooding is from ice jams in the Yellowstone River. The National Weather Service has issued flood warnings and advisories for much of central and southwestern parts of the state.
And in other news from around the state, a Ravalli County Sheriff's deputy shot and killed a man at a residence southeast of Hamilton after the man pointed a weapon at the officer. The State Department of Justice Division of Criminal Investigation says the 47-year-old man called the sheriff's non-emergency number at about 8 last night, requesting a deputy come to his residence. At 8:21 p.m., the man called 911 and began talking about problems he was having with his girlfriend, who was not in the residence. A deputy arrived shortly before 8:30 p.m. The deputy told DCI investigators that the man was angry and agitated, picked up a weapon, ignored instructions to put it down, and pointed it at the officer. The victim died at the scene. His name hasn't been released. The deputy was placed on paid administrative leave.
A 24-year-old Butte man died after a sport utility vehicle went off the road down an embankment and landed upside down in a meatpacking company's sewage pond on the western edge of the city. The Montana Standard reports the SUV carrying Ryan Morris and a 22-year-old man drifted off the right side of Santa Claus Road at about 2:30 a.m. this morning. The Montana Highway Patrol says the SUV went down an embankment and struck a berm separating two sewage ponds. The SUV overturned and landed in one of the ponds. The patrol says the 22-year-old was able to swim to shore, was treated at the hospital, and released. Morris did not make it out of the vehicle. Officials say an autopsy will determine if Morris died of his injuries or drowned.
Cascade County officials have released the name of the C.M. Russell High School student who died in a two-vehicle crash while on her way to school. The Sheriff's Department says 18-year-old Samantha Sipes died yesterday morning on a frontage road next to U.S. Highway 89 east of Great Falls. The Montana Highway Patrol says Sipes was eastbound when she lost control on the icy road and slid into an oncoming pickup truck at about 7:15 a.m. Trooper David Baggs says Sipes died at the scene. Grief counselors have been made available to CMR students and staff. Students from both CMR and Great Falls High plan to wear purple at the girls' Eastern AA playoff basketball game tonight in honor of Sipes.
An 8-year-old Missoula boy who spent about an hour buried in the snow after a deadly avalanche roared into its backyard says he tried to, quote, lick and bite his way out before becoming tired and falling asleep. Phoenix Schools Coburn told Today Show host Matt Lauer this morning that he doesn't remember the moment the snowslide hit him last Friday. He says he looked back and saw a tree wobbling, so he ran. The next thing he knew, he was in the snow. Phoenix's mother, Erin Scholes, says dozens of residents responded quickly with shovels and avalanche probes, but it took an hour to find him. Phoenix suffered a laceration to his spleen and was hospitalized for 2 days. The avalanche also buried Fred Allendorf and his wife, Michael Colville. They also eventually were rescued, but Colville died on Sunday.
A Montana couple faces charges for allegedly letting a 2-year-old boy smoke marijuana. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports Lucas Keith Wilson and Camilla Rose Samuels were charged on February 27th with felony and misdemeanor counts of endangering the welfare of a child. A $50,000 arrest warrant was issued for Wilson. No warrant was issued for Samuels. Court records say the investigation began in August when Samuel's mother told investigators she found a video on her daughter's phone showing Wilson's son putting a pipe in his mouth. Prosecutors say both Wilson and Samuels told investigators they let the boy smoke marijuana 5 times since August. Wilson said it would make the boy mellow. Charging documents say the couple recently had a baby that tested positive for marijuana and meth when he was born.
A 74-year-old Bozeman man who was loading a gun while trying to scare off an intruder accidentally shot himself in the hand. Police tell the Bozeman Daily Chronicle that Carl Kraft was awakened just before 2 a.m. this morning by someone banging on the front door. Kraft said he yelled at the man to leave several times and said he was armed. Court records say that Kraft shot himself in the hand while loading his gun and then fired a warning shot through the door. The intruder broke out the window on a storm door before police arrived. Officers arrested 23-year-old Orion Alonzo on suspicion of trespassing, criminal mischief, and disorderly conduct. Court records say Alonzo appeared intoxicated and told investigators he believed he was at his own house. Kraft was taken to the hospital.
The city of Missoula's decision to appeal a court order that it pay property owners for illegally taking private land to widen a road has increased the legal cost it has to reimburse the plaintiffs to just over $180,000. In 2005, a group of 17 property owners along South Avenue sued, saying the city took their land without reimbursement. In 2011, District Judge Ed McLean found the city should have used eminent domain proceedings before taking the land. McLean's decision awarded just over $157,000 to the property owners and nearly $73,000 in fees and costs. The city appealed and the Supreme Court upheld McLean's ruling. The Missoulian reports that on Wednesday, a district court found the city owed the plaintiffs a total of $180,000 in attorney fees and costs. That is in addition to the $157,000 upheld in the decision, bringing the total $337,000 owed to the plaintiffs.
The Montana Department of Justice has released a recording of a call to police made by the boyfriend of State Senator Jason Priest's estranged wife soon before Priest's arrest. The 45-year-old Red Lodge Republican has denied charges that he shoved Anna Priest, broke her boyfriend's rib, and threw the priest's 4-year-old daughter in a February 1st encounter outside his home. The recording of the non-emergency call to Red Lodge Police by John Trapp was obtained by the Associated Press through a public records request. Trapp tells Officer Matthew Grishup the priest's daughter called her mother crying and saying her father cursed at her. Trapp says Priest then cursed at his wife and told her to pick up her daughter. Trapp says Anna Priest was concerned her husband might shoot them.
Former Lieutenant Governor John Bollinger said he will continue his campaign for U.S. Senate a month after saying he would probably drop out. The Helena Democrat said today he was convinced after making a speech in Butte Wednesday when several people approached him and asked him to stay in the race. Bollinger said in February he would probably drop his campaign after Democrat John Walsh was appointed to serve the remainder of former U.S. Senator Max Box's term. Walsh, Bollinger, and Dirk Adams of Wilsaw are vying for the Democratic nomination for the seat. Bollinger said after Walsh's appointment, he knew he couldn't win a 100-yard dash if his opponent had a 40-yard head start. He amended the metaphor today, saying he could still win if his opponent stumbles.
Former Montana House Speaker John Driscoll is making another bid for the Democratic nomination for the state's U.S. House seat. Driscoll filed his paperwork yesterday with the Montana Secretary of State's office. Driscoll served in the Montana House from 1973 to 1979. He also was a member of the Montana Public Service Commission and is a retired National Guard colonel. The 67-year-old Driscoll ran for the U.S. House in 2008, losing to former U.S. Representative Denny Rehberg. He also lost as an independent, running against former U.S. Senator Max Baucus in 2002.
The Montana Board of Regents has approved Montana State University spending part of a $50 million donation to plan and design a new College of Engineering building. The Regents voted today to allow MSU to spend up to $5 million from the donation by 78-year-old Norm Asbjornsen. Asbjornsen is founder and president of heating and air conditioning manufacturer Aon Incorporated. He says he donated the money to provide more space for the college and to help engineering students collaborate with people in other fields. The Regents meeting continued today in Great Falls. They are also considering $128 million in construction projects and deferred maintenance. That includes a $10 million donation to build a new Montana Museum of Art and Culture at the University of Montana.
Yellowstone National Park administrators say shipments of wild bison to slaughter are done for the winter season after the removal of almost 600 animals under a population reduction program. Federal and state officials said today that 258 migrating bison were captured and transferred for slaughter. At least 264 have been killed by hunters and 60 placed in an animal contraception experiment. The removals were part of an ongoing effort to reduce Yellowstone's bison herds to about 3,000 animals under an agreement with Montana. Wildlife advocates contend the capture and slaughter program is unnecessary, citing research that says Yellowstone could support far more bison than the 4,600 counted last summer. Ranchers outside the park have a low tolerance for the animals because of concerns about bison spreading disease and edging out cattle for grass.
Diminished demand for coal to generate electricity effectively has achieved an environmentalist goal of suspending sales of federal coal reserves in Wyoming's Powder River Basin. No federal reserves in the basin have sold since June 2012, and U.S. Bureau of Land Management doesn't expect to sell more until at soonest 2015. The basin's massive mines aren't running short on reserves, but coal companies also have had little enthusiasm lately for acquiring more reserves. Luke Popovich with the National Mining Association says companies want to see a global economic rebound that would boost coal demand worldwide. The BLM's Wyoming State Office has granted companies' request to postpone three recent coal lease sales. Meanwhile, environmentalists have asked the BLM to suspend leasing basin coal. The BLM hasn't granted that request.
$18.3 million. That's the price an arbitration panel has set for the Salish and Kootenai tribes to buy Kerr Dam near Polson from PPL Montana. It's a price close to what the tribes think is fair and well below what PPL was asking. The panel's decision paves the way for the Salish and Kootenai to become the first tribe in the country to own a major hydroelectric facility. Brian Lipscomb is CEO of Energy Keepers, the tribal corporation involved in the dam negotiation and eventual operation. In tonight's feature interview, Lipscomb tells News Director Sally Mock that the arbitration panel agreed with the tribes that PPL Montana wanted too much money for mitigation costs.
PPL Montana included the cost for mitigating for the damages caused by operations during Montana Power Company's 10-year and during PPL Montana's 10-year. And, of course, we opposed that, said, no, that's not correct. Those costs should not be included, and the panel agreed with us.
And they did come out with a figure a little higher than what the tribe proposed. You were offering $14 million. They came out a little over $18 million, but still much lower than the $50 million that PP&L wanted. So really you feel like, I'm sure, that the arbitration panel basically did what you hoped they would do?
Yeah, they did. There were five areas that we had disputed the price on. And in a couple of those areas, the panel did not agree with us. For example, we said that there should have been an updated depreciation schedule put in place for the tangible plant items, and the panel didn't agree with us on that point. So that was about the $2 million difference between the 14.4 and the 16.6, which was in the preliminary ruling. And then there were a couple items that were in the intangible plant, which is where the mitigation dollars were included, that the panel allowed to be included in the price. So all in all, though, we didn't dispute those at the end of the day, and we feel pretty good about the price that we got.
And so the next step is what?
So we have filed an official notification to the FERC and other parties.
And FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Yeah, that's correct. That we intend to acquire on September 5th of 2015. So that's in place. The next step then is to write a check. There are no other federal actions required. The license negotiations that took place in 1985 put all the mechanisms in place. So we simply pay the price, and the facility transfers over to the tribes, and away we go. Now, of course, that's the next steps officially, but, of course, we have 18 months to get ready to operate, and we're off and running and doing that, and There are quite a bit of things, quite a few things that need to be done there, Sally.
And that was my next question, is you do now need to prepare for the actual operation of the plant, and will you be hiring new people? Have you begun to do that, or what's the next step?
Yeah, actually, we've already started that process in about a year and a few months back. The tribes created Energy Keepers Incorporated, which is a Section 17 corporation solely owned by the tribes. And it is, we have been bringing on staff and getting prepared to operate the facility. We have four tribal members in training as operators with PPL Montana already. They've been there since January of last year. I've got about half of a 20-person crew hired and on board and up and running. So we still have a few more to pull up together and then get all of our operating policies and procedures in place, and away we go.
The energy from Kerdam has always been sold on the open market. Will that continue? Will that still be your market?
Yes, that's correct.
And the dam was named after a former president of Montana Power, Frank Kerr. You're going to change the name.
Yes, yeah. The tribes have always had in mind that when we acquired, we would change the name and make it something more appropriate from the tribe's perspective and not necessarily from Montana Power Company's perspective.
Do you have any notion of how that name will be picked? Will you solicit, I assume, suggestions from the tribal members, or how will you go about that?
No, it'd probably be more of a conversation with the tribal elders, and because typically when we name something, Sally, we don't name it to get attention. We name it based on what it means to us as tribal people. So we have place names for the places and locations across our territory. Kerdam's not any different from that. So or the location where Kerdam is isn't any different from that. So we will solicit that traditional place name from the elders' committees and then talk with the tribal council and have them make the final decision.
And I assume in September 2015, when it is absolutely official, that there will be a ceremony of some sort to honor what has been several decades long effort for the tribe to acquire the dam.
Yes, absolutely. We're planning a commemoration, which we anticipate will take place on Saturday, September 5th of 2015.
That will be an amazing day, won't it?
It absolutely will. Yeah, we're pretty excited about that.
Well, I have been speaking with Brian Lipscomb, who's CEO of Energy Keepers, the tribal corporation that has been involved in the acquisition of Kerr Dam and will be operating the dam when it becomes officially under tribal ownership in September 2015. Brian, thank you so much for giving us an update on the acquisition. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, Sally.
And now for this weekend's forecast. Tonight should be partly cloudy with areas of freezing fog and lows in the 20s. Tomorrow, expect mostly cloudy skies and areas of freezing fog and highs in the mid-40s to lower 50s. Sunday, rain is likely with highs in the mid-40s to lower 50s. For central Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies in the west and in the east, mostly cloudy in the evening, becoming partly cloudy. Lows 15 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy in the west and partly cloudy in the east, highs 40 to 50 degrees, and wind gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Sunday should be mostly cloudy with rain and snow likely in the western mountains, highs 50 to 55 degrees, and wind gusts up to 65 miles per hour along the Rocky Mountain front. For southwest Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies, lows 15 to 25 degrees. Tomorrow should be sunny with highs 40 to 50 degrees, and Sunday should be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of rain and snow, highs in the 40s. And now for the editorial comments of Tom Roberts.
Although we in Montana are geographically isolated, financial and organizational pressures affect how healthcare services are provided in ways similar to the rest of the country. Those of us in Missoula, western Montana, and even statewide will be affected by the upcoming changes in hospital ownership and governance at Community Hospital here in Missoula. A different structure from what has existed for the past 50 years is coming, but at this point, we don't know what that structure actually will be. How medical care is organized has shifted dramatically in the space of just a decade. Here in Montana and much of the rest of the nation, the old model of independent primary care providers is just about extinct. We estimate that well over 90% of Montana's primary care physicians are now directly employed, mostly by hospitals. A large number of specialty providers, including cardiologists and cancer doctors, are in the same situation. And more specialists are following this trend every month. Even 10 years ago, hospital employment of these types of physicians would have been unusual, but times have changed dramatically. Right now, almost all new doctors coming into practice are looking for employment opportunities. Very few even consider starting their own practice. There's been lots of discussion about why this has occurred, but I don't think anyone would disagree that perceived financial stability for both the physicians and the hospitals is a major factor. We use the term integration to describe this process. Physicians become integrated with hospitals when they are employed. They become part of a system which works as a whole to accomplish a number of objectives. As consumers, we hope that this results in better provision of healthcare services, in addition to stabilizing the finances of the participants. But integration is not limited to just physicians and hospitals. Across the country, there is ongoing integration among hospitals themselves. Smaller hospitals are becoming owned and governed by larger hospitals. Larger hospitals are joining systems of hospitals. Even these systems, which consist of multiple hospitals, are joining to create ever larger, multi-state organizations with a central governing system. There are reasons for this integration of hospitals into hospital systems, and of course, people have lots of explanations for why it's happening. While it might be easy to blame the government or even Obamacare, the reality is that consolidation has been going on long before Obama was elected to his first term, and it will continue no matter what happens with health insurance and the Affordable Care Act. Regardless of simple explanations about how medical care will be improved, the bottom line again is that this integration results in better financial stability. This is true whether we are talking about nonprofit hospital systems or for-profit entities which pay a return to investors. It should come as no surprise, then, that this same dynamic is playing out in Montana in many of our towns. Hospitals in our major communities, including Billings, Great Falls, Butte, and Missoula, are already either part of larger systems or are partnered in some important way with multi-state organizations. Many of the smaller Montana hospitals are already closely aligned with or are owned by larger hospitals or systems. Those who are not currently aligned are certainly considering their options. The Board of Community Hospital in Missoula is on the verge of making a decision about which large system to partner with. The question is not whether integration will happen. That's already been decided. The question the community board is currently trying to answer is who that partner will be. It would be hard to underestimate the importance of this decision to the future of medical care, both in Missoula, the western region of our state, and probably the entire state. This is a true fork in the road. Depending on the board's final decision, many important components will be affected, including at least medical spending, level of services provided, competition, and overall quality of care. How the many medical providers in Missoula, the surrounding area, and even statewide will be organized is about to be directly and permanently affected by the outcome of this process. Fortunately for us, these community hospital board members are a dedicated group of experienced and smart people working hard to understand the best solution for this hospital and hopefully for the health and needs of our local and extended community. At this point, we can only trust that the best decision will ultimately be made, because whatever is decided will have a direct effect on all of us who live here, probably for the rest of our lives. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Tom Roberts.
Dr. Tom Roberts is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Connor tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.